Hello and welcome to another episode of Study of X. I am your host, Tim, and this is the bi-weekly Krakoan or X-Men podcast where we discuss the Krakoan era of X-Men comics. And with me as always is Chris.
I mean, this is basically just the Krakoan era of comics. We've dived into Fantastic Four, we went into Empire. Really, it's just anything that's kind of related to X-Men and Krakoa at this point.
Yeah, it's just, you know, X-Men adjacent. We're not going to read everything like that, obviously, but, you know, we'll hit the broad strokes. And Sergio.
Hi, hello. I took that to mean the other way, a Krakoan podcast, so I'm now wondering what kind of podcasts the Krakoan people listen to.
Oh, that's a good question.
Ooh,
That would definitely make an appearance in my series on the day-to-day life, like my Slice of Life Krakoa series.
Yeah, just like what podcast are they listening to? That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. That's such an like untapped source of, you know, just culture.
Yeah.
Because I bet there's something like, you know, here's how to, you know, live with Krakoa. All of these new things people are finding you can do with the island. And then I'm sure there's a politics podcast. There always has to be.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the broad strokes, though. I want to get into like the meat. Like, what are they listening to for like entertainment?
Like the real weird niche podcasts?
Yeah.
Who's the mutant who's the most likely to host a podcast?
Ooh,
that's a good question. I feel like a fun one would be Dazzler.
It would be. I'm going to say who I think the actual most likely one is, and that is Kid Omega.
Oh, I hate that you're
Kid Omega,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the sound levels are definitely not proper. Everything is peaking way too much, but that's the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I bet Glob has a podcast. I bet Glob has a cooking podcast.
Ooh, yeah, he would definitely have a cooking podcast.
But
how about Nightcrawler? I feel like he would have a podcast.
Yeah, I would too.
I could see him not having maybe a podcast if that's what it is now, but like a radio talk show.
That like a scheduled thing, rather like a daily thing.
Yeah, where he just gets people to call in and be like, "Hey, ask your questions."
Yeah, that'd be a good thing for Nightcrawler.
That would be a really good thing for Nightcrawler. That'd be fun for him.
That's our pitch. Nightcrawler starts a podcast.
Yes.
Do you think Beast has a podcast where he just reveals everything about the like fake CIA government?
Oh yeah.
Council doesn't know because they do not listen to podcasts.
Yeah. Yes. Just Beast.
He's like just out there broadcasting everything about all the black ops.
Yeah. Beast just giving like too much information.
Yeah. You know that the recording
he thinks
he
he's
made...
being clever.
Yeah, the recording he made in the Empire book where he's like, yeah, no, I definitely stole this technology and re-engineered it. Hmm. That's his podcast.
Yeah, it's just Beast trying to sound like real smart. But yeah, so we do got a couple issues here to discuss, not just podcast. We have Marauders 11 and 12, as well as X-Factor number 2.
We have some bangers to discuss today.
Yes.
Heck,
these are good.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff here.
Yeah, no, there's some great stuff on the slate today. And if you are following along with what we posted on social media, we have flipped and moved X-Factor to the end of this trio of comics, since it kind of makes more sense, seeing as the next comic after these three is going to be X-Factor again. So it just kind of makes things easier and smoother to follow.
Yeah,
you didn't read anything that you didn't have to.
Yeah, we're just discussing.
We'll get around to that one.
Yeah, we're just discussing it in a different order. So,
yeah.
No worries. Starting off with Marauders number 11, we want to go through this?
Yeah, because this is a great one. I love this one. So, Marauders number 11, To Live and Die on Krakoa. This is written by Gary Duggan and was released back in August of 2020. And just as a reminder, because it's been a minute, the last time on Marauders, Shaw murdered Kate and left Lockheed to drown. The former has not been able to be resurrected, and Xavier is actually calling off attempts to bring her back. So Kate is currently dead. Lockheed is actually alive, and is now heading back home after being rescued by some fishermen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worth saying, this is still part of the path to X of sorts, whatever that is.
Yeah, we're on the road, all right.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. So yeah, we open up on Nightcrawler writing a letter to Kate.
And it's a very heartwarming letter between the two of them. We've seen some of Kate's messages to Nightcrawler, and now we get to see his response. And we get to see all of what he wrote over these few panels, where he basically catches her up as to what's been happening. You know, the cuckoos are dating Cable, the tiki bar is now open, but everything is with a pretty dour mood because Kate is still dead and there is
some
no
plants
seeming
invaded
solution.
Earth.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
plants
you know.
Invaded Earth, but that doesn't go on the letter because it's not as interesting as Cable dating five girls at once.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Just
the
if you were
plant people living in the other side of the moon invaded.
Yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's
but never mind all of that.
Yeah, don't worry
Magneto,
about it.
Magneto did this really sick move and brought down a bunch of satellites. But nah, that's not important.
Yeah.
So, but I do like this scene here because it is a bunch of mutants that were pretty close to Kate, giving her essentially a Viking funeral, where they have put her body in a small boat and they send it off to sea where they light it on fire. And that is because
the coolest type of funeral. You know, I'll excuse them for just appropriating this bit of cultural ritual because it is very cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it is so sick.
I was about to say, I kind of want to pull it back a little bit and, like, as weird as this is to say about a full page of Kate's dead body, she looks sick in this coffin.
You know,
yeah.
Her red pirate coat that she grabbed from the tattoo shop, it does so much work for her.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I like the flag. Like, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the tattoo on her knuckles.
Yeah.
Yep, hold fast.
But yeah, we have a gathering here of people that are going to watch Kate do a Viking.
Yep, uh-huh. And that is because, as Nightcrawler mentions in his letter, there are no cemeteries on Krakoa, so they can't really bury her.
Yeah, that's... has that been mentioned before? I feel like that makes sense, but...
It does make sense. I kind of took it at face value.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of took it that too.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, like, why would you need cemeteries? That's fair. Like,
everybody's going to come back to life, you know?
Yeah.
We don't need that. So, but it's a nice sentiment. I like it. It's a cute little bit of world building and very sad in this context.
Yeah. I think I didn't really look into it, but I think all these mutants that are standing around here are like mutants that have had a history with Kate.
Yes, that's my understanding of it also. You know,
yeah.
We have Jumbo Carnation, we have Banshee, Domino, Magneto, Xavier, obviously. Cyclops is here.
Yeah, it looks like a Gentle and Shark Girl as well, but yeah, I'm not really quite sure what all the connections are here, but yeah, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, and once the little boat is set alight, Emma leaves the funeral and is given looks of disgust by both Magic and Rachel here as she walks away, having shown real no emotion on her face, until she gets back to her home where she shuts the door and does finally break down and cry.
Yeah. I like how the only dialogue we kind of get during all this, the whole funeral thing, is just Nightcrawler's letter as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't need a eulogy or a speech or anything like that. Just having it be silence and what Nightcrawler was writing is perfect.
And yeah, and like Emma just breaking down as soon as she's behind like closed doors hits pretty hard as well.
Yeah, I have to say one of the biggest positives of this issue is I really like Emma's characterization throughout the whole thing. You know, she very much is the character that's going to hold it all in and only break down behind closed doors. She's not going to show anybody. And as we're about to see, she's also very good at controlling her anger and redirecting that into more positive and productive ways.
Yeah, I've generally liked Emma during this whole Kate's Dead arc. I feel like she's been really like consistently characterized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But while Emma is breaking down here, there is a loud crash, and she is not really in the mood for whoever it is until she sees that it is Lockheed, and he is very much alive. So she greets him and immediately asks him to show her what happened. And we get this fantastic cut-in of Shaw firing his shotgun. Or, no, it's not the shotgun, it's the net, where he captures Lockheed. And she is able to immediately figure out what just happened.
Yeah, she is not happy. But yeah, goes into her diamond form, punches a wall, and we immediately cut to a data page.
Yeah, because, you know, we can't go a little bit without Charles Xavier butting in. So it's a data page of his remarks towards Kate. It essentially shows that she has been a part of the X-Men for a long time and is sort of the foundation for some of the more positive aspects of the team. You can tell everybody loves her and cares for her and has become better people just by knowing her.
Yeah. I absolutely take these Xavier's remarks here as genuine for the most part, where I don't think I would say the same for that Angel conversation we discussed like a couple weeks ago. This feels actually real.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. This definitely came from the heart and was not, you know, coiled up in anything else.
Yeah. Did you notice the reference to the meme?
No, I did not. Which one?
She was the true friend that lets you know when you are being a jerk. Do you remember the Charles Xavier is a jerk panel?
Oh, yes, I do. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. It's dumb, but yeah.
Yeah, and Sergio, for you, it's a very old panel where Kate is just saying Charles Xavier is a jerk.
Yeah.
And that's it.
All right, great. I want to see how Googleable this is.
Yeah.
Oh, it should be.
Oh, it is extremely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You
extremely Googleable.
You type in that line and it.
It's yep. Very yeah. Versatile. Whenever Charles does something bad, you just post that and you're like, hey, as a reminder, he's a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I know this intuitively.
it's just true. Professor Xavier is a jerk, is the actual. But yeah, I also, just to kind of bring it back to Emma a little bit, and I agree, I think her characterization during all this has been very on point. Like, I think you easily could have done this wrong and, like, shown that Emma was just kind of using her, but I think what comes through during a lot of the Emma stuff here is that this is something that is hurting her, and she's upset that Kate was put into this position.
Yeah, I definitely get the feeling that, while yes, Emma can be very calculating and cold in what she does, she obviously also cares for Kate here, and you can extend that to others as well, other mutants. You know, I believe we had an earlier discussion in an earlier issue of Marauders where we weren't being shown a lot of Emma caring for others. It was just her actions and people saying that. But now, with just, you know, this arc here, you absolutely can tell, oh no, she does care. She is not Shaw, who is, you know, doing the same level of calculation, but doing it without caring for the mutant cost.
Yeah, like, it's actual grief here. It's grief in a front to put on that she's not actually suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. It's good. But yeah, so we're back to Emma, who is very upset and but calms herself down.
Yep, because as she says, we'll do him right and proper. But first, it's probably good to get Lockheed to the healers, because he's been gone a while.
Yeah.
So, and Healer takes good care of him, saying that he has indeed traveled a long way, but wherever he was, people did take care of him, at least for a little bit. And while that is taken care of, Emma sends a message to Xavier, asking him to try bringing back Kate at least one more time. And he says, well, you're in luck, because Nightcrawler just convinced me to do the same thing. So yes, we will try again.
Yeah, I like this this bit here that Nightcrawler has just been like off screen also trying the same thing.
Same. I really like it. It also helps wrap around to Xavier's remarks that, yes, people really care about Kate when off-screen people are still trying to bring her back.
Yeah.
So, and we're actually going to take a hard cut to something else, and probably my other really favorite sequence in this issue, where we are now in a subway car in Washington, D.C. The car is pretty full until it stops, and everybody gets off except for one woman sitting on a bench and another sitting in her wheelchair. And we very quickly learn that Storm is here to talk to one of the analysts of the X-Desk. Her name is Dolores.
This is our X-Desk person.
Is it one of the analysts, or is it like the X-Desk?
I feel like this is the X-Desk. Yeah, I feel like this is the one. I think this is the one that's like primarily we're reading on the data pages for, if not all of them.
I also believe that, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, this is our girl.
Yeah. This is her in all her glory, and I love her so much, especially how she handles meeting Storm face-to-face.
Yeah.
So to give this scene some context, because it goes on for a little bit, Storm wanted to quietly speak to her, and she, Dolores, initially says that she is not going to be coerced or forced into anything, which Storm says that is not the reason she's here. In fact, she is here to thank the X-Desk for the heads up about Verendi's attempt to poison medicine. The mutants got wind of it, switched out the poisoned medicine for proper medication, and everything worked out. Many lives were saved, and an international incident has been avoided.
Yeah, and Verendi's out millions of bucks.
Yes, which, good, because those kids are terrible.
Yeah. Dolores shows some happiness in the scene for the first time and is very pleased by this news. Just makes it a point that, yeah, Madripoor might be an issue too, even if they aren't, like, explicit, like, enemies of yours. And, mm-hmm. yeah, she says, it's her stop, I'll see you later.
Yeah. I think this is really good. I didn't know if I wanted to say this until after we got to the data page, where it is revealed that Dolores was indeed our X-Desk. However, I really like the contrast that is created when you realize this is the person we've been reading from, because the way she kind of deals with Storm is very different from the kind of more aloof and like comedy relief-y character that we get to read on the data pages. And I think that gives a lot of color to the character that I did not expect. Like, it was a genuine surprise for me to read, oh, that was the X-Desk? And it does not read as inconsistent. It reads as, you know, someone who's got more facets to them than come across in writing. I feel that's a really cool kind of accomplishment.
Yeah, not to get like too ahead of ourselves here, but like from the data page we get kind of later, and just again from the previous ones, from what I have gathered in this scene, she is kind of putting up a wall and trying to like stay cool during this.
Oh, she is, absolutely. And yes, you later learn that this is her trying to like look as cool, like trying to play the character of a double agent.
Yeah.
But she does it really well. She does pull it off the moment.
Because, it really does come across as this very, like, serious, dramatic thing. It's very funny to, like, read that line about, like, being coerced or whatever, and it's like, you didn't think that was about to happen.
Later on she's going to be giddy about
it. Yeah, she's so excited she got to meet Storm. And, yeah, it's great. I agree. Like, it's... like, this type of character trying to put on a front to not make her seem just, like, you know, really excited about this encounter makes just so much sense. And, yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, because, you know, otherwise you would just... if we were left to imagine what this character may look like based on the X-Desk data pages alone, you would probably, you know, imagine a dainty guy just at a computer kind of powerless and...
yeah, it's like some disheveled, like, lower dude in a cube.
Yeah, and this is so colorful. This is so, you know, it has such weight.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I love her. I love that we have a face for her now when, I mean, in other books or anything, we may never have seen the character, just the data pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, this is a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, big fan of Dolores. But yeah, we kind of
always been.
Yeah, always have been, still am. But yeah, so we get like one last little shot of her and Storm as she's leaving the train, where she just says, "Hey, thank you for those drugs, by the way. Like, my mom is better now because of that." And we cut back to the hatchery with that kind of note of hoping that we can all have a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because we see as they have recreated another husk for Kate, she still has never broken out of it. Her husk simply stays in there until it dies. And Nightcrawler mentions here that, you know, this probably isn't the end of Kate's story. There has to be something unique about how her powers work, and she's out of phase with everything else. They just have to figure out how to guide her back. And that gives Emma the brilliant idea of reaching out to Kate first. Because, as we know, Kate does not destroy barriers, she simply ignores them. She phases through them with her powers. And we see here as Emma helps bring out Kate from the egg without breaking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the one hand, I don't think I would have liked it if we had to do some epic quest to bring Kate back. But on the other, this feels like just answering the Sphinx riddle and then solving the thing, when structurally I feel like this is something they probably should have considered before they got to the 16th attempt at doing this.
Yeah.
Yes.
You gotta imagine there are like specific stipulations for certain mutants where their resurrection is not going to look exactly like this. Because we have seen mostly resurrections for mutants whose appearance is very like human-like and anthropocentric, let's say. There are mutants that do not look like that and who might not go through the same, you know, break out of egg procedure as any other.
Yeah.
So you gotta imagine they are aware of there being like special conditions for other mutants to like be revived.
Yeah. The other thing I think is like you can't break open the egg from the other end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. It seems odd that you're like on like attempt 14 and you're just like, oh shucks, she's drowning again.
We have to stand there and let it happen.
This feels a little unearned, but on the other hand, I've had enough of this Kate's dead.
Yeah, yeah. Bit,
so yeah. I'm like, okay, let's move on. You didn't ever get like to a good answer to this riddle you set up, so let's just continue.
Yeah, like sure, whatever.
Win some, lose some.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, yeah. We put her mind back in her body, and we good to go.
She's back. I do think the five kind of have a similar thought of you, Sergio, because they're like, oh, we really should have thought of that, huh?
Yeah.
Like, they're clearly, like, you know, hitting their head with their hand and like, oh, yeah, no, duh. That does make sense.
Yeah. This is like, I don't know if I would say another example, but this is another instance where a mystery is set up and it is heavily hinted at being some fundamental aspect of like Kate's being, especially with the mystery of her not being able to make it through the portals and all of that. And then, you know, you just find out is some oversight from the five. It's a little unsatisfying. She makes it back. She's with Lockheed now.
Yeah. I suppose in defense of it, we don't know if she can go through a portal yet or not, since it's just the egg for now. So there could be a mystery there. But, I mean, I can agree. It's just, oh, we thought of something different and did that. I still like Emma's sentiment about it. But, you know,
it does.
I'm easy to please.
It does make sense that Emma would be the one to come up with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But she kind of takes the long route to get to it instead of, she's drowning. How about we pop that egg?
Yes. When you put it that way, it's really funny.
She's back.
Yeah.
Yep, she is back. She says hello to Charles, to Lockheed. Emma gives her a hug. and says the last thing she remembered was Emma kissing her at the Red Keep, which is long before she sets sail and dies. So,
yeah, she immediately starts plotting her revenge.
Oh, yeah. She's like, well, what happened? And she, and while Emma kind of tries to dance around it because she's like, well, you just came back. Kate's like, oh, Shaw did it, didn't he?
Oh, did anybody catch the number of times that they attempted for Kate to come back?
It's 18.
I saw it was 18. I don't know the significance of that.
That is a, that is, for Jewish people, 18 is considered a very lucky number.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, I had to do some Googling about that. Yeah, not an X-Men thing, but is Kate related?
You know, that actually makes what Nightcrawler does in the next issue a little bit more connection to it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, that's actually really good to know. Thank you.
No problem.
So we are ending on a data page here, this wonderful one from Dolores Ramirez, as she sends an email to everybody at the X desk about her meeting with the weather goddess. And she does fangirl pretty hard about it.
I just before we get too into it, I want to talk about the first paragraph a lot because it is very funny as like it's almost like a what's the word I'm thinking of? It's like a little warning before the rest of it, hey, there was no coercion, no bribery was attempted, before just going into Dolores just fangirling.
Yeah, it's the I just had it. Is exclaimer?
Yeah, disclaimer. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Of her being like, yeah, no, I'm not under threat. This is okay. But oh my gosh, you guys, I met Storm.
Her perfume smelled like ozone.
There is a way to read this in which, like, this reads like an email you send, and you're making sure that you've covered your bases because you're not in a position of extreme power, because you're you're trying to be careful about the way you're phrasing things, and you're making sure that you're not putting your job at risk because your boss is probably going to read this. So you're going to put this disclaimer at the top.
Used a burner account and they still found me, just like very much like being like, I went through the procedures here.
Yes, and that points to, you know, I really like this character because they're someone who, despite having an important position, because they do kind of handle mutant and Kraken intel, they just don't have that level of power. They're making the decisions, or where they did act unilaterally, like giving that tip to the mutants, but that was done kind of against protocol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when it says from Dolores Ramirez, the X-Desk, I do truly believe that means she is the X-Desk. I think the X-Desk is like this extremely understaffed desk somewhere where she sits down and like starts sifting through stuff, and she's extremely like starved for resources, and these communications barely get read by anyone. That's kind of like my vision of her, and I think that's kind of like a nice vision, like in a very, relatable version of the character.
I absolutely agree. I honestly think, like, I feel like you really could have messed this up by, like, actually showing her, but with this, it's just like, yeah, no, I completely understand what we're going for with, like, this character. And, yeah, I don't know, she's great. Big fan. Still, like,
and you know, if she got a Yoda of power, she would like improve mutant relationships in a second because she's such a fan, and she's
absolutely
like always advocating for them.
Yeah,
at least now after this encounter, and even before when she gave the tip to them. So she's like the advocate for the mutants within like the intel apparatus.
Yeah, I also love the just kind of bit about her mom being on the Krakoan medicine and that being kind of a recent development too, because it completely does just like It's very interesting watching this character, even like through the data page, just have to kind of grapple with that fact and trying to remain like as unbiased as possible, like while knowing
it was mentioned. It was mentioned before that her mother was on crack on medicines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So seeing that evolution has been really nice to play out, and honestly, not something I recognized or saw the first time I read through these as they were releasing, because the distance between each releases was so long. But now going through it like this, it's like, oh yeah, obviously there is a character development going on here with her, and it's lovely.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, she's great.
Really? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there is also a mention here at the bottom where she says, P.S. Damn, I should have asked about that party. So again, we have a reference to some sort of party being put together.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be swords there.
Maybe there'll be swords there. Maybe there won't. Mm. We don't know.
Yeah. But we're
still... We are on a path of swords.
Yeah, we are on a path of swords. But yeah, in issue 12, we're still on the path.
Yeah. Before that, just wanted to say... all-timer issue. Really fantastic.
Yeah. I would agree. Good stuff.
You know, I came back to this being like, I remember really liking Marauders. And when we kind of started out, it was fine. And some of it clicked with me. But now that we're really rolling, I'm like, okay, yeah, I remember why I loved Marauders. This book is just fantastic. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so for Marauders number 12, The New Phase, this one is also written by Gary Duggan and released in September of 2020, so we have moved along a month. And we open up here with Kate being reintroduced to Krakoa in celebration, first with a group of mutants that she doesn't exactly recognize at first, until Emma tells her that these are all the people that the Hellfire Trading Company have saved.
Yeah. It's kind
of, and she has no recollection of, because of like the last update to the Cerebro stuff.
I'm guessing it's less that and more just it's been so
just
many
a sheer amount.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't quite catch what they were going for with here.
Yeah,
but that does make sense.
Yeah, I do think it's just the amount of people that she has saved. And I do have to mention here, Lockheed does not have shape-shifting or like size manipulation powers, but he is now small enough to kind of sit around her shoulders like a scarf, and I think that's lovely. It's a good look.
Yeah. But Storm gives her little speech about very reminiscent of like the House of X thing when she's like being like, you know, are they mutant or do we recognize them as mutant? But she's very excited about this. Like, I felt like the House of X part was... It was very decorum-ish, but, like, yes. Storm is delivering this with just absolute happiness that Kate's back alive.
Yeah.
There is a joy here that was definitely not in the other one.
Yeah.
And I do like this bit here, because Storm asks, how do I know it's you, Kate? And Kate says... because when I was just a dumb kid, I threatened to abandon you over your haircut. And Storm gives her a hug and says, and then that girl grew up to get knuckle tats.
Yeah.
It's just such a sweet little, like, I don't know. There's a lot of really good little ways that Duggan is able to do to be like, yeah, no, these two people care about each other.
Yeah, they're, it's very interesting, like, looking at this event compared to the event in House of X, where in House of X it does kind of give off that like ritualistic tradition vibe, whereas this seems almost just pure celebratory. Like, we are celebrating someone coming back that we all loved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She actually has a crowd of people that, you know, gather around for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not to be reintroduced as a massive hero of Krakoa, you know, who went out into space and then died. She's Kate, you know, she's a hero to many of the people here, but, you know, maybe not the whole nation. They're here for her, not for the moment.
Yeah.
So next up, right after this, we do have a data page. Bishop sent a secret message to Beast about a bad actor on Krakoa. He figures that's probably why Beast wanted him on that team. And Beast is like, you know what? We'll talk.
Yeah, he also specifically mentions about bringing it to Storm instead, but is like, yeah, I had a feeling this might be like why you wanted me on the team, so I figured I'd bring it to you first. And like, big mistake, Bishop. Don't bring it to Beast first. What are you doing?
Yeah, don't do that. Don't bring it to the CIA first. And I'm fairly certain this is in relation to Shaw. Am I correct in that?
I would assume so. That is, I would guess that might be what he's talking about, but
yeah, because he's the only one I could think of right now as being a bad actor, because he did get Kate killed, and he did kind of work with Ferengi to make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly a bad actor. I don't know if this is that bad actor they're referring to, but it would make sense given that this is the issue this data page shows up in.
Yeah. Speaking of Kate and Emma, do we want to talk about the outfits in this issue? Because, dang.
Kate's is nice. I like her long red dress here. It's, you know, strapless dress. Emma's is, you know, it's Emma.
Yeah.
That's what I can say.
I don't even know how to describe this.
It's a long-sleeved, low-cut top that kind of, like, hangs almost, you know, down to her knees, and then she's got these skin-tight boots going up, like, halfway up her thighs.
Yeah, and, like, I have to imagine this is, like, brittle, almost, because it has, like, this, like, diamond cutout to it.
Yeah, it looks like it's covered in sequins, but in a tasteful way.
Yeah.
She and Kate are going to be riding horses at one point. I would imagine riding a horse without covering near your upper legs is awful, but she does it anyway for the name of fashion.
Yeah, you know, it'd be like that sometimes.
She could probably turn that part of her body into diamond.
You know, probably.
Yeah,
and maybe like not feel it much. It wouldn't be as bad, but still.
Yeah. It'd probably be bad for the horse.
Yeah.
No, probably not good for the horse. But as Emma says here, she's got a lot of money. So getting horses, especially world-winning horses, not going to be that hard.
Yeah.
So, but after they have a nice horse ride on the beach, Kate stops and asks Emma to, you know, tell her and show her what happened. Emma, again, does try to push it away as she doesn't really want to talk about it right now, but Kate is pretty insistent on wanting to know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, she gets a shot here of Sebastian just blissfully hanging out on the ship as Lockheed drowns.
Mm-hmm.
Emma says we stick to the plan, nothing changes, and Kate says she has a better idea. Did I miss the plan? What are we planning?
I don't know.
I don't think we know.
Okay.
It's not mentioned. I feel like it's very easy to connect it with being revenge or some other big plan that Emma and Kate have.
I suspect you might want to kill Shaw.
Yeah.
Because of the... Yes. That's what the two says.
Well, I don't know. Kind of the implication I got from this was that there was a plan before Kate died.
Yeah, I got that feeling too. Is they had something before this, and now nothing changes.
Yeah. But
I think, like, that's just the business.
Yeah.
I feel like.
But
that's just, like, let's move on. Let's not make much of a fuss, because then it's going to work against our, like, business interests. But I don't know if there's anything beyond that.
Yeah, I don't know, because they kind of, the other line of dialogue that kind of makes me think that is earlier, she says, he saw us coming and made a move first, didn't he? So I do kind of wonder if they had something else planned for this, but I think that's interesting, because it definitely shifts it from, it wasn't just Kate and Emma just, you know, passively waiting with Sebastian kind of lurking around, like, he was always going to do something. Like, they did have a plan to, you know, strike at him, but they just didn't get it off in time.
Yeah, I think it's a middle point between, you know, just business as usual, just scheming as usual, because this is kind of like the Hellfire Company's whole deal.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want it to get to the point where you're like playing 5D chess and this was part of the plan all along and so on and so forth. So yeah, I think it's somewhere in between.
Yeah, that's probably fair. But yeah, Emma asks Kate what she's thinking. He says something about she deserving it. I think the implication here is Emma read her mind. Because yeah, we don't know what is planning or what it's being planned here, but they didn't reveal it, so it will probably actually happen.
Yes, and Emma seems pretty amused by whatever idea Kate just came up with to get back at Shaw.
Oh, she's very pleased about it.
So we'll have to see what that is, because unfortunately we're not going to see it this issue.
Yeah.
Because at the moment we need to jump into a really fun welcome back party.
Yeah.
The girls arrive on their horses as a bunch of Kate's very close friends are here to celebrate her rebirth. So yeah. You have Iceman, you have Storm, you have Cable, you have Cyclops. I see Mystique in the background as well as Domino. Logan's here. Just a bunch of folks.
Yeah, it's basically like all the Marauders and just kind of, you know, various friends of Kate. Rachel's...
Is Cable hiding something from Scott?
I think he is, now that I'm looking at it, because Scott doesn't look too happy, and Cable looks like he's holding a beer behind
him. Yeah, I was about to say, I was like, yeah, Cable, did Cyclops just catch...
like a bottle of kind of beer.
Yeah, did Cyclops, like, catch Cable drinking or something? Like, is that...
His underage drinking?
Yeah.
He's not going to let his son do that.
Yeah. We got Rachel here, too. That's nice.
Yes. Go ahead.
Did we talk about that these two have, like, a lot of history? I know we kind of mentioned it with, like, Rachel and Betsy, but...
Not fully, and it is actually going to be really important later on when something happens in the issue, but if you wanted to go into it, now is the time.
It's nothing really too out there. It's, you know, Kate had friends when she was younger on the X-Men, and one of those people was Rachel. Her and Rachel were pretty close. Her and, Magic were also very close, and that's just kind of the connections there. I think they might have just shared a room at the mansion. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And there will be more to that, but I'll get into that a little later. But yeah, they share a moment. Nightcrawler is here and gives Kate a big hug. Happy.
Oh, we skipped the part where Wolverine says, "Congrats on losing your resurrection, Sherry."
Oh, yep, that did
that's
happen.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
It's very like, hey, there's the weird uncle being like, hey, good job, kid.
Uh-huh. They do have a weird uncle relationship. I can see that.
Yeah.
It's a fun relationship. I really like how their dynamic has been in Marauders the few times we've seen them together.
Hmm.
But
yeah, Nightcrawler is here.
Is here. They hug, and he immediately goes into how he knows she's been having some, you know, problems. You know, when she mentioned she wasn't sure how she was going to fit in, she couldn't go through the portals, was she welcomed or not? And at the moment, Kate's feeling pretty good and doesn't really feel like she needs to discuss them. And Nightcrawler's like, no. We will have a lot to talk about. But in the meantime, he does have something for her. And he gives her back her Star of David necklace that she had that was almost lost in the funeral.
Yeah. So it's a nice gesture, I think, from Nightcrawler here.
Yeah, no, really lovely gesture. I always really liked this, but also now knowing the context with the last issue and 18 being a very important number makes a lot of sense in why Nightcrawler looked so thoughtful at that moment. It really puts two and two together, but I am also really glad that he did this and just, you know, he himself being as faithful as he is, respecting that for another fellow mutant as well is really nice.
Yeah, it's one of the things I really do like about Nightcrawler's just characterization in general. It's not just that faith is important to him. He finds other people's faiths important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's other people being happy and content is important to him as well.
Yeah. Magic's here with a mariachi band.
Yes, in perfect magic sure fashion.
Yeah, we get a...
Do you think that mariachi is mutant, or are they staying on the other side of the portal, and that's why they're pictured this way?
I'm guessing she just portaled them in instead of, like, had them actually... Yeah, I'm assuming they are not mutants, no.
I would kind of like it if there was a mutant mariachi band.
Me too. But like, why not?
Yeah, why not? It would be fun.
Yeah.
But I kind of agree. I think she probably teleported herself over to Mexico and was like, hey, you guys, you're with me. And that's just jumped over here.
Yeah.
So they're playing from the other side of the portal. They're not being allowed on Krakoa.
Yeah, I can see
no,
that.
They're in... They are in Krakoa. There's a scene later on where they are in the background.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, she just brought them.
I wonder if you have to get, like, special permission for that.
Well, she's a, you know, magic's a war captain.
I was going to say, you'd have to bring it up with magic, which I don't know if anyone's going to.
Yeah. but, yeah, we get a running embrace here. And the two fall to the ground right at the feet of Sebastian Shaw.
Mm-hmm. The stoic man of the hour, as he is here to personally welcome her home.
Yeah, here's some whiskey, aged 50 years by Tempo, which is nice callback to Sebastian just geeking out about whiskey.
I was gonna say, don't forget, this man loves his whiskey.
Yeah.
A lot. So, but I do like the sequence here because he's like, hey, welcome back. With you back, everything's gonna be fine. And she gives him a hug, which he is not expecting. And she is very openly being like, yeah, no, thanks for the gift, buddy.
Yeah. It doesn't feel subtle, but I kind of get the vibe that Sebastian didn't really pick up on the threat behind this.
No, I don't think he did either, which is really funny to me, because it is not subtle, and he should have seen it, but nah. This man's gonna get duped so hard.
But the party rages, and Kate says, hey, Magic, let's get out of here. And they poured out to a tattoo parlor.
Yeah,
They do stop by the Marauder, so she can change into the pirate clothes.
Oh, yeah, that's important.
Yes, which, good choice.
I'm glad, so she got buried and burned in that robe, or that pirate jacket, so I think the implication here is that she got more of them, and I like that.
Yes, I also like that, because that's wonderful. She found the fit and was like, I need 5 copies of this.
Yeah.
But I do want to mention that there is some internal dialogue here, where Kate mentions that she put on a show for everyone, basically. She was really not in the space or the mood to celebrate when the stuff that has been broken has not been fixed yet. And that's why she tags along with Magic to get out of there.
Yeah. But yeah, stops off at the tattoo parlor here. Tattoo girl is about to go out on a date, but Kate throws a giant thing of money on the cash register and says, like, hey, can we do one more?
Yeah, she's like, I know what I need. Can it be really quick?
Yeah.
Which, that looks like a lot of cash.
Yep.
So, later on, as Kate is getting her new knuckle tattoos, the tattooist, who is a woman, does ask her, you know, hey, I don't ask people this, but what's the deal? And all Kate has to say is, it's the name of the man who hurt me.
Yeah.
Just to give you a bit of an idea of what tattoo she's getting.
Yeah.
For the next moment, as, you know, the tattoo is finished, and I do like this little bit where the tattoo artist is like, hey, this looks like your first tattoo. Do you know how to take care of it? Because obviously Kate just came back. She doesn't have tattoos anymore.
Yeah.
But she does know how to take care of it, and she kisses the tattoo artist before leaving. And before we jump off to, you know, the next scene, remember when I said, hey, X-Men is going to get pretty gay? This is also part of what I meant. Kate has been queer baited ever since she was introduced back in the 80s. And if you're not familiar with the term queer baiting, that means to hint at a character being LGBTQ, but not confirming it. So this is usually done by characters, you know, giving longing looks at each other or being really, really close friends, but nobody can outright say that they're gay or not. And this here with this kiss is the first official confirmation that Kate Pryde is in fact bisexual. In an interview, Chris Claremont, the gentleman who created her, did say he always intended for Kate to be bisexual and be soulmates with Rachel Summers, who we saw her give a look at earlier during the party. But Claremont was not allowed to do so because of the comics code that specifically said you can't have LGBTQ characters. So, unfortunately, she was just queer-baited for most of her existence up until now. That scene earlier, also with Magic, where Magic comes in and hugs her, and then the both of them teleport out to have a fine evening with each other, that was also hinted at by Claremont, is that Kate did have feelings for Magic, and actually Karma as well, although Karma is not in this. But shout-outs to Kate for joining the lineup of officially LGBTQ X-Men. The roster is growing, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. The correct ship, by the way, is Magic and Kate. Just throwing that out there. But, yeah. It's good stuff. I'm glad this is here.
That sounds... Big W. That sounds like a big Chaos ship. I'm kind of here for it, only because... Rachel does get together with somebody else, and I think it works out, but I can see Kate and Magic. That works.
I think Magic is too good for Kate.
Ooh, okay.
That's spicy.
I like that take. That's a fun take. But after Kate confirms years and years of theories with one simple kiss, she leaves and heads outside, and she has another bit of dialogue where, you know, she's been awake for almost a day, but she's not that tired. She has a lot to do, and every breath that man sucks into his lungs is an insult I cannot abide. And as the tattoo artist leaves, Kate asks her one question. Which way to the nearest harbor?
Yep, and we get a reveal here in the next page of the knuckle tats, which we already kind of saw from the cover. But, yeah, kill Shaw instead of hold fast.
We're starting our revenge arc, and I am so excited. Yep. Shaw deserves it 100%, and probably then some.
We finally get the title page after this, and then one last data page to end the issue.
I'm now realizing I don't think I read this data page at all.
Oh, really? Did you just like stop once you hit the to be continued thing?
Yeah, I think I did.
You know, to be fair, I did it first until I went over to get to the next issue. And I was like, oh, there is. It's kind of hidden off to the side.
Yeah, I.
Yeah.
So, but it's fairly long, but can be summed up pretty easily. Essentially, Jumbo Carnation, our favorite four-armed fashion designer, is thanking Emma for allowing him to see the world and travel once more. And he also thanks her for the nice cover story for his death, because he did die several years ago very publicly. And what he told his friends was, he faked it. And all of his fashion friends say that that was a wonderful idea. In fact, one of them thinks about doing it himself so he can just have some time off.
Yeah, this is very funny. But, yeah.
It's silly, you know.
Also mentions, you know, not putting him on the spot during the gala. So, wonder what that's all about.
I do believe a gala also is another word for party. Perhaps they're connected. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's the X of Swords. But yeah.
Perhaps it is another word for swords.
Yeah, that's true.
No, maybe.
No, I'm pretty sure it isn't.
No, I also don't
I
think
just,
it is.
I just checked.
But it's okay. We can continue living in that era if we want to.
But yeah, do we want to move on to X Factor? Or do we have any more thoughts about Marauders?
No, really liked it. Great. Pair of issues. I'm really glad that they got put together into the schedule by Chris. So thanks.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of these two. I love the characters. I love the way Gary Duggan does the characters in this. They feel very consistent and very real. I mean, obviously, I'm biased. I love that Kate came out bisexual and it's been confirmed. That's lovely. I always love it. But it's really just a really good set of issues. And we not only closed one plot line where Kate came back, but we have now directly opened another one where it's, okay, so now what do we do about Shaw? And it just kind of flowed into it very smoothly.
Yeah. I will say I am sad to see no Marauders issue in our schedule. But I guess what I see of the schedule is only two episodes ahead, so maybe we'll get back to that soon-ish.
Yeah.
Crossing my fingers.
Yeah.
Yes, it should be sooner than later. I do need to, you know, put out the next schedule, because coming up pretty soon is actually going to be X of Swords, and that is going to take over a lot of stuff. So the Marauders will be back, but they might be in a crossover next time.
Okay, yeah, looking forward to that nonetheless.
But all right, let us move on to X Factor number 2, and this one does have the longest title I think we've ever had. This is Suite number 2, Mojo Verse Sonata, XF3 OP45. I don't know what those stand for. I think XF is for X Factor. Dance Macabre. That is the entire title.
Yeah.
This one is written by Leah Williams and released in August of 2020. And we are going to open up here on Krakoa at night as a mysterious individual is seemingly teleported onto the island and is taking a package with them to the Boneyard.
Yeah. We get a little bit where they're passing the pod, and we get this conversation here between the five that I think is kind of fun. It's just them being supportive of Proteus.
Mm-hmm. Which, to remember, he does burn out his body just by using his powers, so they do need to make him a new body every now and again.
Yeah.
Just making sure he's good to go, you know?
Yeah, but yeah, we leave a box on the doorstep of the Boneyard, and Aurora finds it in the morning.
I do have to say, shame on you, Sage, for being asleep at the security desk. That is not good security manners. She could have seen whoever this was, but... Nah, she was out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yep, Aurora is back. This is John Paul's sister that was murdered in the first issue, and we had to go through everything to bring her back before, you know, X Factor was created. And
yep, they got her out of that car.
They got her out of that car and just dumped her on the floor. And never forget that. But you know what? She's doing a lot better now. She's looking great. Her brother is very happy to see her, and she's happy to be here.
Yeah, stumbling upon mysterious packages in the morning.
Mm-hmm. As one does sometimes.
Did we talk about Aurora at all?
We
think we did, but I'm up for a refresher.
I don't know if it's going to come up here really at all, but one of the important things kind of about her character... way back when was she has DID, which is dissociative identity disorder. But yeah, she has like two personalities. I don't really know what has been done with that recently, but yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, I did see that a little bit when I was looking her up in the first issue of this. It doesn't seem to be a thing recently, but that is an aspect of her character. And you know, if you're not sure what that is or what that means, if you've seen Moon Knight, it's the same idea of, you know, having multiple personalities, but for her it's just two.
Yeah. They talk in French a little bit, and North Star is very happy that she's here.
Mm-hmm. Everybody is here to greet her, including Amazing Baby, who just will not stop barking.
I love this little bit of Amazing Baby, just them being like, North Star being like, hey, can you make the dog chill out? And Rachel just being like, he's just a puppy.
Yeah. New smells. Come on.
Yeah. He's excited.
So, I would argue he's a little bit more excited than just new smells. Because as Polaris takes the package and opens it, we find out it's filled with a lot of bloody mush. And Amazing Baby does eat some of it.
Yeah, it's probably safe if he's eating it.
It's fine.
It's okay. You know, sometimes the puppy just eats a lot of blood.
Yeah. iBoy brings him a mug to scoop up. I also just want to say I like the banter between this team.
Yes, I do as well. It's hard to fit in when talking of, you know, a general summary of the issue. But, you know, there's this moment here of Prodigy and Dakin, you know, sniping at each other here. And yeah. Then here's iBoy with the mug for the blood. You know, it's cute and it's fun, but it is very hard to really put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of, like, quirky teenager team-ups is increasing.
Yes.
With every new series.
Yeah.
Yes. Hellions, I would argue, is less teenagers and more not adjusted adults, but it's kind of the same vibe with some of them, like Orphan Maker.
Yeah, if anything, they feel even less that they have it together than the New Mutants.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I would agree with that.
They see something else in there, and Deccan finds a pair of, looks like ballerina shoes.
Yes, and Prodigy mentioned something here that is very important. They are covered in sponsorship logos, and Prodigy does not recognize any of them. And as a reference, Prodigy can, you know, absorb the knowledge and powers of those around him, or the knowledge of those around him. So the fact that he does not recognize these sponsorship logos is a big deal. They don't know where these are from.
Yeah. They kind of grill Aurora a little bit about if she saw anything, just like anyone standing around or anything. Aurora is overwhelmed by this and just tells everybody to shut up. You know, fair enough. She's a little bit overwhelmed.
Yes. I mean, as she said, I was dead this morning. I am, in a sense, about 2 hours old.
Yeah.
You know, it is good to give her some breathing room. So her brother is there to back her up. And they kind of take a nice moment as Prodigy looks up on his phone that he made this multiversal Google search, essentially. And he looked up these logos and found out that they are from the Mojoverse.
Yeah, there's been a murder in Mojoverse, North Stars.
This is the good kind of like narrative shortcut.
Yeah.
Yes.
I do not mind him just having a search engine that's like cross multiverse.
Yeah.
Same.
And can somehow hone into sponsorship logos specifically.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, from a specific reality too.
Sometimes you just need to have that thing you need in order to continue the story you want to tell.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whatever. And it's wonderful. This is how they know.
And Sergio, I do want to ask, we have brought up Mojo World or Mojoverse before, but do you know anything about the place?
No. Everything I know about the place, I knew when I was playing Marvel Snap because I remember it being there. I do not even remember what that car did.
I can't say I remember either, actually.
Let me look it up.
Okay. While you look it up, I will go over its history a little bit. So we first were told about Mojoverse in the Krakoan era when it relates to the Warwolves. This is actually their original place, and this is where they are from, is Mojoverse. But this place was first introduced in Longshot number 1. In 1985, it is a extra-dimensional and extra-temporal world that is home to the Spineless Ones. These beings and the planet's other inhabitants were driven mad by TV and radio signals that bombarded them from Earth. And because of this and being driven mad by these TV signals that they didn't understand, they have developed an intense love of television, movies, and live streams, especially very, very violent ones.
Yeah. It's basically a planet of, like, I don't even know if it's a planet, but it's a place where basically everybody is just, like, way too online.
Yes. Yes, but in a really
bad
way.
Kids do be looking at their phones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should mention also Mojo World and Mojo, who we are going to meet later, have been longtime enemies of the X-Men, the New Mutants, and X-Force before.
Yeah, very, very reoccurring enemies. Mojo's around a lot. Northstar sighing when he hears about Mojoverse being where this is happening is an appropriate reaction.
Hmm. Yeah. I can
talk a little to the Mojo stuff in Marvel Snap now.
Okay.
And I do remember vaguely some of these, and they're both related. So there is Mojo, that character who you get to meet in this issue later on, who gets +6 power if both sides are full of cards.
Okay. Okay.
And that's a recurring theme with the Mojo World location, which is, you know, whoever has more cards here gets +100 power. So I think, you know, they sort of like relate to having a lot of cards active at the at every moment. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, the more content, the more powerful he gets. I can kind of buy it.
I was gonna say definitely. I could see the relationship there.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's clever.
Yeah. Northstar says it's time to go. Polaris tries to ask for more time. Northstar says nah. Rachel asks Aurora if she can watch Amazing Baby.
Who is covered in blood, by the way.
I love this exchange of Aurora just being like, you feel comfortable leaving a werewolf with me? And she's just like, yes, please. Just
like dog sit.
Yeah.
Yeah, just dog sit for a little bit. I'm not taking him back to his horrible homeworld.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Also, just Northstar just looking down at Eyeboy and commenting that we need uniforms while Eyeboy looks sad is very fun.
Just poor Eyeboy. He's so excited to be there, and just people keep bringing him down.
Yeah.
But once everybody is dressed properly, we quickly make our way to Mojo World, because there is a Krakoan gate set up here. But just to give you a bit of a taste as to what we're walking into, Prodigy did have to borrow Dakin's credit card and iBoy's phone number to register for the Mojoverse Headshot TV cable program so they could learn more about the mutant that got murdered. It didn't actually give them more information, but now they have 500 Mojoverse channels at the Boneyard.
Yeah, and also a link to a campsite called Spiral Showcase.
Yeah, but don't click on it.
I want to know the reasoning why Prodigy couldn't use his credit card and phone number, but this is very funny.
I have a feeling it's because he knew this was going to open up a bunch of nonsense and probably be way too expensive. So he's just like, Dakin, I'm going to use yours.
Yeah. But yeah, we're in Mojo World. It sure be Mojoing.
Yep. Bunch of very tall buildings. There's a huge wall where a bunch of people are waiting to get inside to Mojo World. The other people here that are also trying to get inside, they remind me of a very specific kind of sci-fi where it's like 70s, almost late 70s sci-fi cyberpunk kind of mixed together. Where it's like, okay, what if we made Mad Max, but a little bit more into the future? And that's what these people look like.
If this was Final Fantasy X, that big old ball there would be a Blitzball Arena.
we can't delve into our Final Fantasy talk. We talk a lot about Final Fantasy, but if that was a Blitzball dome, that would actually be better. The X-Factor team does run into a couple of people waiting to get inside, and they learn that they do need a sponsor to get in. But they also quickly learn that Earth mutants are a much sought-after commodity here, so it shouldn't be too hard for them to get in.
Yeah, I love these little panels here of Polaris blowing their cover by just some random piece of metal just rising up toward her, and she just slams it back into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she's like, you know what, whatever. And then immediately a bunch of camera drones come in and be like, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
But meanwhile, the more important thing is happening, and that is Amazing Baby giving Aurora a tour of the Boneyard.
Yeah, just walking around.
Mm-hmm. I love Amazing Baby. He's so cute.
Yeah.
Oh, such an adorable little thing. It's weird to think that grown up, he could be the skin-stealing monster that just tries to eat people. But right now, he's wonderful.
Hey, you know, nature over nurture. Nurture over nature?
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
Yes, that one. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So we get a data page after this. Who gets in? Who gets the chance to win?
Oh boy, it is an ad for Headshot TV, where it explains to you that immigration into Mojo World is done via live stream, where chat gets to vote if you can come in or not.
Yep.
It is a horrible dystopian future, and I want no part of it.
Yeah, this is extremely reminiscent. I was just trying to look this up. Of the Inkle which is a comic series that I read that's illustrated by, it's called John Girard. He's relatively a well-known illustrator of comics in the 80s, written by Alejandro Jodorowsky, who did a bunch of weird stuff, and has a fictional universe called the Jodoverse, which is kind of fun. But yeah, this is extremely reminiscing of that, and that book is also like a very 80s version of kids do be looking at their phones too much world.
Oh, that's very funny.
That's great. You know, I wonder if it was born of the same ideas. Because I looked into why Mojo was created, which I'll get into later. But do you know where they got the inspiration for Inkle?
Is it the Fifth Element?
Is that where they got their idea from?
I think it is. Okay. Which I think is also very Mojoverse adjacent.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'll have to look into it because the creator for Mojo very specifically says she made him based off of the works of a couple of philosophers actually in the 80s. So I'm wondering if they're all connected in some way. But I will bring them up once we get to Mojo.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Headshot TV, where you get to vote on immigration. And we get to see that play out with each member of X Factor as they get to sit in a chair while stream chat gets to decide if they can come in or not. And it goes about what you'd think, but it's a very nice version of Twitch chat outside of Dakin's. But to be fair, Dakin is not playing nice either.
Yeah. Prodigy nerds out. They think it's adorable. Polaris, everybody just likes her because she's Magneto's daughter. People seem turned on by Rachel, and everybody loves iBoy.
Yes, I do like how iBoy's, some of the comments are just eye emojis. It's wonderful. His is very cute. He's a cute little character.
They have a whole boy made of eyes.
Wonderful. Dakin's is you know, he asks everyone if they want to see the rest of his tattoo because it goes below his pant line. And, chat's freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah, this page is funny.
it's a funny page. I like this page. I like this weird interaction with a fake Twitch chat and how everybody has reacted to it. And we're going to see the fallout pretty quickly because everybody gets in except for Dakin, who was downvoted.
Yeah. He was downvoted for being lewd. But yeah, he's going back to the Krakoan gates. North Star is mad. But not at the people not letting him in. He's mad at Dakin.
Yes, because as he rightly says, you have a pheromone ability. How could you not make this work? And he's like, well, maybe I wanted to go back and be with your hot, sexy sister. You ever think about that?
Yeah, and then we cut to the Boneyard where Aurora is watching this on TV.
Yes, because everything in Mojo World is streamed, so she is able to watch it with their nice new cable package.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They've jumped through the hoops. They're trying to get in.
Mm-hmm. But despite all of those hoops, they still don't have a sponsor. So, unfortunately, they're being held up by what I assume to be Customs Border Security, who tells them if they want to find out more, they need to press 1.
This confounds Prodigy.
Yes, because she is a person. There is no 1 to press.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get it.
Yeah, so the North Star, Rachel, and Polaris are like, let's just break in, and before anything really pops off, we get Mojo.
Oh, boy. Do either one of you want to describe what Mojo looks like?
No.
I think that is a very good response, but save for the sake of the audience, will you describe what he looks like?
No.
he is a horrific creature, to be fair. He is horrid in many ways, and none of them are good. But his design has not changed since 1985, when he was introduced.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the adults in WALL-E, if they were, like, extrapolated to dystopian sci-fi, with a good dose of, like, fat phobia.
Yeah, the fat phobia is a very big part of it, but yeah, we got... Adults in WALL-E is a good call. It's like that, except, yeah, dystopian sci-fi and significantly more supervillain.
Yeah, he's got a spider leg walker. He's got very long claw-like arms. He's got, like, the scorpion tail, but it has a camera on the end of it. It is all mechanical. And he's got this, like, horrific mess of, like, wires and tubes and everything on the back of his head connected to the rest of his suit.
It's also a very large mouth with very pointy teeth.
Yes. So, Mojo, he was introduced in Longshot number 3. He is one of the aforementioned spineless ones, so he actually does not have a spine, which is why he's in this weird walker creation. And he views the mutants as a good way to get views and higher ratings on TV, because he found that if you use mutants in televised violent combat, people in Mojo World absolutely love it. And before you think what came first, Mojo or Mojo World, Mojo came first, and when he came into power, he renamed it after himself, just to give you an idea of what kind of a person he is. He has kidnapped Psylocke before, he's kidnapped Rachel Summers, he has invaded New York City to get better views.
I am like 90% sure he's kidnapped like almost the entirety of the X-Men.
He did, actually. He kidnapped the X-Men at one point, de-aged them, and called them the X-Babies.
Yeah.
It's horrible, and I don't like to think about it. But, you know, think of, like, Muppet Babies. That was a cartoon for a little while. It's the same thing, but with the X-Men. And they're in Mojo World.
If you're listening and you don't know what the Muppet Babies are, I don't think I want you listening to my podcast.
What are the Muppet Babies?
Yes. No, you don't know what the Muppet Babies are?
No, yeah, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I was going to say, if you don't know who they are, you're too young for this podcast. I'm sorry. We would have had to kick you off.
But yeah.
Mojo is an interesting character. I also found out through looking him up that his creator, Anne Nocenti, was originally designing him to be a Doctor Strange villain. And he originally shows up in Longshot, which ties into Doctor Strange. But instead of getting to write a Doctor Strange comic after this, she was moved on to New Mutants, and thus Mojo became a mutant villain instead.
Yeah. Longshot ends up being on the X-Men later, despite not actually being a mutant.
Yeah, when I found out this was all from Longshot, I had a moment where I was like, who? Who is this?
Yeah, he's an X-Men for like a bit, actually.
Yeah, this is an instance where the villain absolutely outlives the hero that it was created for.
Yeah,
because yeah, Longshot, I don't even think he's still around.
Maybe I don't think he's like gone, but he hasn't been used in a bit now.
Yeah. So, but last little bit about Mojo, because I found this rather interesting. Anne Nocenti did do an interview in 2007 at the sequentialtart.com, which is a website that has been up since 1998 and is still being updated, which I thought was very nice. But in this interview, it is asked how she came up with the idea of Mojo and if this was at all similar to Grant Morrison's work, because at the time he was doing something kind of similar with Watchmen, where it was a commentary on daily life. So she says she was studying media at the time, and she was going for a master's degree up at Columbia's School for International Affairs, and she was reading Marshall McLuhan, Noam Chomsky, Ed Herman, Lippmann, and others like that. So Mojo came from reading all of them. She was also writing journalism and hitting on a multiple media ownership dilemma. That led to the creation of Mojo and his need to control all media. In fact, at one point in a New Mutants story that we are not going to read here, she had a character called Manufactured Consent after Noam Chomsky's book. So from all of that mess is where Mojo comes from.
Yeah, probably some ideas in common with the Inkle stuff, which is also pretty philosophic, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see it here, even, you know, being, what is it now, 40 plus years later after Mojo has been created, you can still see that the commentary is still relevant now. It is now streaming in Mojoverse instead of just television, but there is absolutely a lot of commentary going on here about content and the need for views and what you would be willing to go to get them.
Yeah. Prodigy is like, Mojo's trying to get us on this thing because we're going to boost the stream numbers.
Mm-hmm. Mojoverse loves Krakoan muties right now.
Yeah, we love the muties, and this is all it takes. The team is about to fight. Yeah.
I don't know if it's much of a fight.
Yeah.
But Polaris holds Mojo upside down, and as he tries to send his army after them, Rachel decimates them with barely any effort, and Mojo very quickly capitulates and answers their questions.
Yeah. One of the things I think is very funny in this next couple pages, he starts talking about, like, sponsorships and how the top five are often, like, compensated for it. Each of the five TM, which he trademarked the five, so sorry, Krakoa.
Oh, you're right, he did.
Yeah.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
Krakoa's the hot thing. Of course he was like, oh, I'm gonna have my own, the five.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, I didn't even put that together. What a dork. Mojo is such a weirdo.
Yeah. So our next data page is the top five Mojoverse live streams. We got a chart here with times weeks as the y-axis and thousands of trillions. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm getting my axes mixed up. Time weeks is the x-axis and viewers in the thousands of trillions is the x-axis and, or y-axis. I am so confused. Whatever. Graph stuff. It's not actually labeled.
It's not, which is unfortunate. It's very hard to describe. There are five logos here. Four of them are pretty normal, but there is a fifth one that was the lowest and suddenly shot up above the others, which I think is the one we're going to want to focus on here. But again, it does not have a name, unfortunately. All we can tell you is that it is like a weird star.
Yeah, second place I think is Spiral, but like other than that, like I got no idea.
Yeah, so unfortunately not a lot there. But Mojo does let slip that, quote, there was a dumb mutant girl who died while competing for a top spot. She debuted on Spiral's showcase. And this puts the team into action as North Star and Polaris pretty much head off to where this studio is because they can see the logo from here and run into a trap that they should have seen coming, really.
Yeah.
The same Mad Max people from earlier are now inside the city and have set up a power dampening trap so they can film themselves beating up a bunch of muties, therefore getting more views and hopefully getting on one of the top five streams.
Yeah, so they got their little gang of misfits here to fight the X Factor. Says he's getting ready to dance. The rest of the X-Factor get up, and we cut away from the fight, and,
I do want to shout out, though, as the X-Factor team has their, like, pose moment, I-Boy is backwards, which I think is really funny. It's so cute. I love him a bunch.
That's good.
Just a good little gag. But later, like Tim said, we do cut away from the fight, back at the Boneyard. Kyle comes home to find Aurora an amazing baby still sitting on the couch, watching all of this happen on Headshot TV, as he notices his husband is on TV and is fighting a bunch of people.
Yeah. I like their little reunion here. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I barely know about these characters, but, like, I think this little just, like, embrace here just kind of speaks volumes about the relationship.
Yeah.
But Aurora says, you know, the Boneyard gets Mojoverse Cable and just pats on the couch.
Yeah, so come watch the team fight on another planet in another universe.
Aurora just, like, cuddled up on the couch with, like, Amazing Baby in her lap and then a bowl of popcorn is just...
And a bunch of pillows.
Yeah, like...
She is absolutely here to just be comfy and just watch everything play out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, yeah, that is the end of the issue. Just another sweet little one. There was a lot in this one, you know, having to go over Mojoverse and Mojo. I think it's fine. I still think the interactions between characters and their banter is definitely the highlights for X-Factor, at least so far. I'm curious to see how this mutant murder plays out in Mojoverse, because I remember bits of it, but not all of it. So it'll be fun to go over that again.
Yeah, I do like the characters. I think the action feels a little bit all over the place, but not nearly as it would on like Excalibur or something like that. So I think it does. Yeah, it's easy to follow, even if it's not the most like coherent stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would agree. I do think there is a scale there, and Excalibur's at the top, and this isn't there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really surprised I didn't make the connection with the Inkle before. So there's a bit in the Inkle where the president of a planet gets killed, basically, but in their last moment, they are able to move into, like, a bionic spider-like mech. And the thing the mech has, it keeps transforming over the comic, but the thing that it consistently has is a camera, so that it transmits, like, the stuff to people, and you often get, like, check-ins with people watching. And there's a big plot point about getting them to not watch the TVs.
Yeah.
How interesting. I'm going to have to look up which one of these came first.
Yeah, it's
oh. Yeah.
It's very interesting how, like, reminiscent it is of each other.
Yeah.
I think the Inkle is, like, 80 something.
Yeah, because this would have been 85.
Yeah. Hmm.
So it's probably
it
just
is interesting.
Yeah, it's probably just one of those things where it's like people came to the same ideas just in different spots.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just feelings of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I just think that's very, very interesting that it played out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But all right. That is
fun trio this week.
Yeah, no, really fun trio. Love Marauders, love X Factor. Next week, we are getting into X-Factor number 3, Wolverine number 5, and back to the New Mutants with New Mutants number 12. It's been a minute since we've seen them, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I actually was thinking about it. We have some issues from them, like, coming up pretty soon. But, like, when you mentioned them, I was like, wow, we haven't read an Excalibur issue in, like, a while.
Yeah. No, it's been a minute for them, too. It doesn't help that we got, you know... What, 3 new comics into this, and then a tie-in event, and an event itself. There's just been a lot going on.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what the Excalibur stuff was.
Oh, you know, multiversal stuff. We accidentally turned everybody into a Captain Britain.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
There's like an angel court?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that when we get to it.
Yeah, we'll be back there soon. A couple weeks from now.
For better or worse.
Yeah.
Yes, for better or worse, we will be back in Camelot.
But yeah.
All right.
That's our episode. Want to do plugs?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So if you have made it to the end here with us, thank you again for listening with us. If you enjoyed your time and would like to leave a review, please do so on your favorite podcasting app of choice. That really helps us get out there and find more people to read along with us or just listen along for the journey. And if you are looking for this podcast on social media to follow when episodes come out, our reading list, or some of the fun tidbits that we'll post on there, you can find it at Study of X on Twitter, also known as X, Tumblr, and on Blue Sky. If you have any questions, comments, your favorite ideas for X-Men podcasts on Krakoa. Go ahead and send us an email at studyofx@gmail.com, and we might read it here on the show. And if you are looking for me on social media, you can find me at Sonics on Blue Sky. That is S-A-W-N-E-E-K-S. Not too active there, but I do post every now and again. Mostly just watch for comic book artists and writers on there to see what they're coming out with. And Sergio, since you have decided that the Void is wonderful and very, very nice, where can they find you to pitch their podcast idea for Krakoa?
I'm just browsing the channels on the Mojoverse sub that I got.
Ah, okay. Did you get the premium tier or the extra premium tier?
I got, yeah, the extra premium. I just wanted all of those extra channels.
Ah, very nice. Very nice. Okay, well, I'm sure they'll be able to reach you somehow through the Mojoverse TV.
Yeah.
And Tim, if they are looking for you to find your credit card information to then purchase these channels from Mojoverse, where can they find you to commit that crime?
Yeah, so you can actually find me on Blue Sky at Sawoneeks, S-A-W-N-E-E-K-S.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, that's where I am.
That sounds similar. I can't tell where I've heard it before, but I'm pretty sure that already exists, and I don't know if it's you.
No. That's me. I don't post there that often, but when I do, you know, that's where you can find me.
Okay. Well, if you do have your Mojoverse or Mojo TV questions, definitely don't send them there. You can send it to the email instead. But for now, that will be it for us. Later, mutants.
All right, bye.